All right, welcome into Real Born and McKee.
Yes.
We are not with our boy Nick Kyprios today, who is Sportsnet has sadly let go. No, I'm kidding. That's April Fool's. He's golfing. He's somewhere in Florida. We have a couple of shows this week, because the Jays play. Yeah. So he figured he'd take advantage of it. He will be missed until then. Yeah. But for now, it's you and me. How are you doing?
Scram beat it.
I'm good. You mentioned April Fool's there. I will not throw anyone under the bus. But as you may know, this morning, Tiger Woods put out a tweet.
Oh, God.
At 8:40 this morning.
Yeah.
And said that he's going to be playing in the Masters despite rupturing his Achilles 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I looked at my phone. I was making a coffee. I looked at my phone. And I got an email notification from somebody at this company who sent it out, like, because we send out, like, big sports things to, like, the whole company. Like, we do that all the time.
Right.
But somebody, I don't know the person, and I'm not going to say their name because I don't want to embarrass them. They sent it out to the whole company. I was like, listen, I've gotten God on some April Fool's
group chats or
no, like my mom was very ruthless when it came to April Fool's. So I'm very scarred and I'm very
hate April Fool's. Most
people I like April Fool's. Like I like a good joke. Like, but I'll tell you one that's, you know, relevant to hockey. When I was, I don't know, maybe 11, 10 or 11, we were in Toronto. My sister Jackie lives in Toronto. So we were at her place. She was here for university. And the Leafs were playing the Washington Capitals that night. Mm-hmm. And my mom was like, Sam, we have tickets to go see the Washington Capitals and Toronto Maple Leafs play hockey. Like, I'm like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. And I was, like, jumping around Jackie's apartment, so excited.
Oh.
And then, like, I saw the old ticker on the score when it used to be a TV channel said Leafs at Washington. And I was like, a little kid, wasn't really paying that close of attention. And I was like, wait a second. Yeah. And my mom told me we had tickets to the Leafs game.
That's brutal. You're supposed to do it the other way. It's supposed to be bad news
It was good. It was good. Also, when I was a teenager, we were in Florida. My mom told me that, like, she was pregnant.
Oh, my God.
And I was, like, 15 or 16. She was like, you know, and I bit it. I was like, I believed it. I was like, there's no way. No. She's like, you're going to be a big brother. I was like, no. And I believed it. So I'm very keenly aware of all. I saw the Mitch Marner one that got flicked out today. I saw, like, some Tavares ones. Get your jokes off. I don't mind.
Yeah, I generally hate it. I was convinced I was going to summer school once.
You're right. That's the better way.
Yeah, then it was like, oh, thank God I'm not. Right, you get to live with the... Yeah. Well, that's great.
Anyways.
This hour of Real Kipper and Bourne's Brett, brought to you by Bet365. Going to be joined by a minute by Jason Bukala. Going to talk a little bit about, the new signings coming to the NHL. Ryan Leonard joining the Washington Capitals. Mm-hmm. Jimmy Snuggerud joining the St. Louis Blues. You were saying you're a big fan of the fact that Ovi was taking out Leonard on his first day as a Capital.
If you've listened to the show, you know my thoughts on
Ovechkin.
Never been an Ovi guy. Haven't been since he wore a tinted visor for Team Russia at the World Juniors. Never been a fan.
So slighted. That is the most, like, hockey culture thing.
Listen, I was like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And then we beat him 6-1 in the medal and knocked him out of the game. Anyways, that video of older Ovi with all the young guys at the bar, just, you know, them chanting bands or making dance, whatever the song they're singing. God, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
He's five away from the literal all-time goal record.
And he's out just there pilsners.
Having a blast, looking like... Listen, like, if that guy walked into it'd be like, you know, the zigzags, we might have never seen him before. I'm like, this guy with that barrel, with his hair? I'm like, look at this guy. And he's just one of the all-time greats.
Oh, the other day I was having a chat with someone about the potential for players post-career to get big. I did it.
Oh, my God.
I was up to 230 or something pretty
post-career?
Quick. Yeah.
He's already there.
Well, I know. It's going to be fascinating to see how tight Ovi can keep it. All right. We are joined by Jason Bukala of the Pro Hockey Group and Sportsnet Puckpedia, the founder and scouting director. Oh, my God. Bukes, where are you, dude?
Going on,
fellas, I'm on the road. Okay, I'm on the road. I pulled over in the en route here. Complete chaos outside Kitchener, but I'm here for you, as you know, all the time. I got my scout Cito on here.
Yeah,
I'm meeting Sammy at the game in Brampton. I thought Sammy McKee might go up to Brampton after the show tonight, but
no, go to the Jays game today, Books. Go to the Jays game. Go for the major league sports. I already made my pilgrimage down to London for Sunday afternoon to go see the Knights and the Attack play. So that was my junior hockey. I'm going to the Jennies on Friday. So those are my two junior hockey games. But, yeah, so you're on the way for scouting. What on road are you at? They're all so scenic.
Yeah, they all look the same, but they are chaotic. Okay. At this time of night, it's pure entertainment outside Kitchener here. There's a lot of chaos in the parking lot. A lot of fantastic people watching. I feel like I'm on the strip in Las Vegas all the time.
Yeah, you're not.
En route Vegas, baby.
I'm not.
No. Route Vegas. All right. So we were just talking about Ovi and Ryan Leonard. You did a great sequence of videos. I believe it's on your Instagram page, if I'm not mistaken. Is that where you put that out, or is it Twitter?
Did a piece on him today for Sportsnet.ca too.
Yeah, it's on all the above, Borny. I'm getting better at this social media thing. So it's
your multi-platform.
At Pro Hockey Group. At Pro Hockey Group on, at Pro Hockey Group for Twitter. But it is on Sportsnet.ca. You get all the good, and then you get a little one in there that I call an area of an opportunity for him that he's going to have to improve on. Ryan Leonard, that is, as he makes his debut for the Washington Capitals tonight. And before we get into it, I am fascinated by the weight conversation too. I do believe OV is going to look like I have Polish heritage, and my Jaja, my grandfather. I think there's a good chance OV is going to look like my Jaja in a few years. So
just three bills,
Yeah, he went from like 200 when he was in the war to a svelte 295, I'm sure, towards the end. So, anyways, a
couple of pierogies along the way.
Jaja Ovi.
Oh, pierogies and cabbage rolls. I mean, all kinds of surprise foods.
All right, give us a Ryan Leonard scouting report there, Books, if you can.
Yeah, sorry. I know this is a hockey show. So Ryan Leonard, outstanding prospect, honestly. I guess I shouldn't have used the word unicorn in my story, because there's about three or four of these guys. I don't know, when you have a league of 600 or 700 players, whatever we have, and if there's like 10 kids like this coming into the league, I still kind of think those are unicorns on balance. It's a very low number. Ryan Leonard is going to add another layer of power forward and skill to the Washington Capitals. He's one of my favorite players outside the league. All kinds of growl. He shoots the puck. His first instinct is to get it to the net instead of, you know, be a natural playmaker. But he's one of those guys that he doesn't necessarily have to touch the puck to be involved in the play. So if there's a third assist that could be handed out, if you get my drift, because he extends plays and he's in the way and he's in the fight and he creates chaos, he's one of those guys. It's going to be a heavy lift here to start his career. We all know that. It's hard at this time of year to step in. Matthew Nyes did a nice job of it the first time he came out of school. Ryan Leonard had 25 even strength tucks this year, boys. Four power play, one on the short. He played all situations at BC. Captained, he was the World Juniors. He was a top forward at the World Juniors, MVP at the World Juniors. This kid's a handful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't watch any of his college exploits, but him in the World Juniors, I mean, he was undeniably great. And, you know, all these guys that are coming in here, I can't help but notice that a lot of them have an American passport, Books. Mm. I'm interested in the sort of class, because we've seen what happened the last couple of years at the World Juniors, and with the best on best stuff that's starting to pop up here, where we're going to need these next generations to start, you know, insulating what we already have. You know, you see McKenna and what he's doing. I think he's got 8 points in the first two games for Medicine Hat to start the WHL playoffs. Like, how do you weigh the two countries' development programs, like, at this level? Like, have the U.S. really gone ahead of us a lot? Like, I don't know if it's too broad of a question for you, but I just think it's fascinating that, like, you think of Snuggerud who's coming in, this Leonard that's coming in. It's like, it seems like there's a lot of American influence on these college guys. There always is. But at this level, it feels like it's better than it ever has been.
Totally agree. Let me put it to you this way, Sammy. They've got it on they have it in every skill category. So if you look at Snuggerud coming in, he's kind of like Ryan Leonard light. He's a guy too, uber competitive kid, shoots the puck a ton. What a great quote. I don't know if you guys heard it or not. They asked him what number he preferred going to the St. Louis Blues.
Yeah.
And he says, I don't care what it says in the back of my jersey. I play for the crest on the front of my jersey.
Hockey men everywhere are like, oh God, that's incredible.
Oh my God, man. Yeah. If a kid at the combine could come up with something original like that for me, I'd be taking him out for, you know, stuff later on. I'd be very excited about it. But I mean, they have the U.S. model is grooming players to be productive in all kinds of categories. So we talk about the Leonards, you talk about the Snuggerus, you talk about the Nyes.
Yeah.
But then you look at the Lane Hudsons and the Cole Hudsons. And by the way, Quinn Hudson, who's the older brother of the Hudsons, the oldest. He's a forward at BU.
There's three of them?
He's going to get a deal. There's three of them, buddy. Oh, he's going to get a deal, too. And I would anticipate he signs one here coming out of the Frozen Four. Now, he's a forward. He's a different player. Yeah. But to your point, you know, when you start talking about McKenna's and, you know, the Celebrinis or, I don't know, like we could go down, even Porter Martone. I can go on to watch Porter play tonight.
Yeah.
There's a power guy. There's a big power guy. But the volume of players and in every category, even goaltenders, like look at the goaltenders. Trey Augustine is, I didn't see if he turned pro with Detroit yet or not today, but I believe he's going to come out of Michigan State. They've got it going on in every category, fellas, and coaches. Like David Carl, come on. There should be a lineup around the corner for him for his services coming out of Denver.
Yeah.
So how does the process of like cross-checking leagues go? That always fascinates me because you watch a guy and you're watching a guy in the O and you're like, okay, at the O, he's this. Is he better than a guy who's played 42 games out of Denver in a totally different style of hockey? Like how does the process of determining how to stack these guys up against each other happen?
So great question. First of all, you have to eliminate some sort of bias and you have to take as much information in as possible. And you also have to factor in, for me anyways, the position the player plays. So if you're a defenseman, for example, like the Cole Hudson kid, and this is why I wasn't worried about Lane Hudson when he was going to turn pro, Borny, because I saw him college hockey, you played it. College hockey on balance is 3 years older than any category of major junior. So the average age is like 22 and a half, somewhere around there. So if you're 18, 19 years old and you're a defenseman, for example, like Lane, and I see that he's in the fight and I see how calculating he can be to defend, that tells me something because I kind of feel more comfortable that he's going to be able to, even though some of those college games are not as skilled as maybe the really high-end elite CHL players, but they're men and they're playing hard and they're playing fast. And you remember those college games, like you're so amped up on that Friday night, right?
To get it
out of your system because you've been sitting there all week. You play those two games. That's why when I go scout college games and for my staff, I would always tell them to go for both games. Don't tell me you're going to this game here on a Friday and that game on a Saturday. Yeah. I need you to see how they are on both nights because Saturday is a lot more organized. But anyways, I digress here. You have to take the macro into account here and really you start with your baseline. Never change your baseline. You know, are you thinking it? Are you executing it? And are you playing fast and thinking fast? Like, is your relentless compete in place? Because nothing else matters. I don't care what level you play at in the world. If I'm scouting a kid in Europe, in college, in the CHL, if you don't play fast, think it fast, and have that relentless compete, especially at this time of year, the rest of your skill set never going to matter. It doesn't matter. You could be the most skilled guy on earth, but if you're not ready in all those other categories, you're never going to be able to make it happen. So it's a fun time of year, but it's different hockey. I will say that. And then next month when I'm in Dallas for the World Championships, U18 Worlds, that's going to be different all again because those Euros are going to come over here and play on a NHL ice size sheet. So now you're going to see some of those smaller skill guys who've been playing on bigger ice and see how they adapt on the smaller ice next month. So a lot goes into it.
I was just furiously trying to pull up the Calder odds for the NHL, but I'm an idiot. I can't figure it out. Anyways, I just wanted to ask you because you're mentioning Lane Hudson a lot there. And I got to tell you at the start of the year, when he was taking all those minuses as a Leaf fan, it was a lot more fun to talk about it and be like, oh yeah, maybe he's not so ready for this. And then I watch him against the Panthers.
It's so nice to you to treat the young kid that way.
And then I watch
as a grown adult, what a nice thing to do.
He's playing in the NHL, it's fine. What are you doing here? But I watch him against the Panthers on Sunday. And it's like, oh my God.
They got Quinn Hughes.
Yeah. So for me, I think Celebrini's been brilliant this year. Dustin Wolf has been unbelievable as well for the Flames. Like, he's the only reason they have a chance. Like, how do you handicap this Calder race? Because all three guys are having brilliant rookie years.
Lane Hudson's for sure for me right now. It was, and I honestly, if Dustin Wolf could have led, I'm not saying they're not going to get there, but so I guess right till the end of the season, I'll hold back on my vote. But if Dustin Wolf can somehow backstop the Calgary Flames in the playoffs, listen, the Calgary Flames, you guys know how they play. They got such great character. They pull for each other. They work for each other. But they have not scored a lot of goals this year, guys, right? So when you're 32nd in the league in goals for, that just puts enormous amount of pressure on your goaltender because you can't outscore your mistakes necessarily. So that's where I sit on Wolf. I think that he's a fantastic story. He's probably number two. I don't know. Probably splitting hairs on number two. But listen, Lane Hudson, what he's done here, you have to go back to 1985-86 with the Montreal Canadiens. I forget. Might have been like it was a Euro, I believe, who was named Rookie of the Month for the Habs twice in one season. That's how far back with that historic franchise. And this is the most amount of points as a rookie defenseman, I believe, that has been scored since Nick Lidstrom. So the kind of company he's keeping here and the way that he's evolved, to your point, Sammy, at the beginning of the year, it was okay. You know, how are you going to adjust? How are you going to be more calculating with your defending? Obviously, he's got small area quickness. He's got dart and active stick. He's not going to want to body up necessarily, right? He doesn't want to get worn down off the cycle. Smart, super competitive, and then the rest of his skill set. You can't teach that. You can nurture it, but you can't teach it.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I'm just looking at the guys that he's ahead of in just points this year for defensemen. Like, you know, he's ahead of Evan Bouchard, Dahlin, Josh Morrissey, Adam Fox, Eric Carl, like points guys.
Yeah.
That not there, you know, you don't measure the defenseman just like that, but yeah, it's a real
grown up yet.
It's a real deal here. Like, yeah. And with that Demidov too, they might be in good shape.
Yeah. Ooh, Montreal.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they might be in good shape.
They're going to be a little bit okay. Yeah. Like, they got the Fowler kid at BC, the goaltender who had an outstanding year at Boston College. Eventually he's going to arrive. Obviously, they've got Demidov on the horizon here. And, you know, I can't wait for him to get over here for the kid, first of all, because it's good. He wants to be in North America. He wants to be an NHL player. And they're playing with him a little bit over there between the years. You know, they threatened to bench him for KHL playoffs. Leading scorer, by the way, at Sky. Yeah, we're going to bench you for the playoffs on an expiring contract in the KHL. Bananas, of course. And then they dressed him. So they're just playing mind games with him. And then he scored. He scored in the first game. So, boy, oh, boy, the Montreal Canadiens, they got a lot in the cupboard. A lot.
All right, that's enough of that.
Slavkovsky looks pretty good, too. So we had Andy Strickland from St. Louis on yesterday. They're a bit of a story, right? I think they won nine straight. They've just surged up the standings. The one thing that stands out to me is when we had Doug Armstrong on earlier in the year, you know, he was kind of waffling about what they were going to be, and they were thinking about the future. And he said, you know, one thing people don't really look at with us is we have five former first round picks coming to join us in the coming years. So the Blues are good and they have guys coming. Snuggerud is one of them, I presume. And then there are some others that look pretty good as well.
Well, yeah, I don't have their roster in front of me. Thanks for putting me on the spot.
Dalibor Dvorsky is one.
It might be in the washroom at the en route if you want to go have a quick look there.
Otto Stenberg, Zach Dean, Zach Bolduc, Snuggerud.
Here we go. Yeah. Here we go. So Stenberg, this is the great thing about what the Blues have coming. So with Dalibor, you got a shooter, okay? Mm-hmm. So Snuggerud, shooter. Dalibor, shooter. Right shot, left shot. Two different styles of play. Snuggerud's more in the fight. Dalborski's more like a guy who ripped the pill from the flank on the power play and do some things from the perimeter. And then you get Otto Stenberg, he's a bull moose in a china shop. He's built like a fire hydrant, but he's in the fight all the time in the middle of the ice. He's been part of the leadership group with Team Sweden at every level, captain their team. And he can push the play up and down the ice. He'll provide secondary offense, I think, in the NHL, but he's got all those other tangible things. When I think of the Blues right now, though, guys, as good as they've been, I think it's like 15-2-2 or 16-2-2. I may be out by a game there in the last 20.
Smoking hot.
Look at the top of the table. Look who's doing the scoring. Thomas, Holloway, Kyrou. Like, these guys are leading this group, and they're all under, they're 25, 26 and under, you know, and Dylan Holloway's got, I believe, 25, maybe 26 goals now as well. So not only do they have it on the horizon, they got that mix of veteran guys that are going to, you know, still be good enough to assist that push with those young guys. And then you start saying what you said there, Borny, about the young guys coming in. I think St. Louis had eight, if I'm not mistaken, eight prospects at the World Juniors this year.
How did they do that? They just won the cup. Number.
Yeah.
Why do they have picks and prospects?
They're pretty good.
Smart.
Yeah. Doug Armstrong, man.
Yeah.
Hey, picks, prospects, and you signed two offer sheet guys. Yeah. So you mailed in some picks. Like, yeah. They spent draft capital for the offer sheet situation for Broberg and Holloway, and they still got all that on the horizon. Great job by Danny Janelle there and their scouting staff. Like, there's certain teams in the league, and you know, I love all the guys on the tour. I really do. But it takes about 10 minutes to take a look at the Dallas Stars, the Washington Capitals, the St. Louis Blues, even what the Calgary Flames are doing right now, the Montreal Canadiens. Like, these teams are, you know, replenishing, and they have a plan, and they're sticking to it, and look what's happening. With St. Louis, it's extra special because it wasn't too long ago they won a cup, and now they're going to be looking like they're loaded for bear for several more years.
It's interesting there. You mentioned the Caps and the Blues, and I think there's some parallels between those two teams. For sure. And if I'm a general manager with like a kind of a pushy owner, I wouldn't necessarily love those two teams as examples because they're like, well, look at them. They never sucked. Well,
look at Chicago. All of a sudden, yeah, it's like, why are you so bad?
Yeah, but it's like those two teams never really sucked. And now they're at the top of the stand. One team's won 9 in a row. One team's at the top of the standing. They've been able to sort of, you know, bridge the gap between being really good and being cup winners and never truly bottom out
scouting,
to build their
baby.
Team. Is that, yeah, I guess that's scouting that it comes down to, but I'm sure there's some owners around the league that are like, those goody two shoes. Making me look bad. Like Kyle Davidson in Chicago is like, geez, this isn't looking great for me. Yeah.
Why do you have to suck though? Like, why do you have to suck? I mean, you're only one or two bad decisions away from it all falling apart. Like, I'm going to pat myself and our staff in Florida on the back just a little bit here. They're doing in Florida with the Panthers is unbelievable. Bill Zito's done a fantastic job with him, with his staff. But we were getting good, and we were good right before he took over. Mm. But when he left, it's not like what happened in Toronto. Like, Kyle Dubas had a different plan for the Toronto Maple Leafs, and it ended up being that there wasn't any prospects, the cupboards were bare for draft capital, they were up against the cap. When Bill Zito came into the Florida Panthers, if you want to take a look at the guys that he traded out around the league that we left them, Weegar, Huberdeau, Matheson, Montembeault, Owen Tippett, all these, you know, first round picks that the cupboards were full. There was space available on the cap, and you could just turn over the roster, or you could trade out prospects that you didn't want to have. And you don't have to be bad to be good. And yeah. When you get good, you should be able to create some synergy there. But my one thing I would always say, don't fall too in love with what you have.
Like, yes.
There is an expiration date on what you have. If it doesn't work, don't fall too in love with it, because you got to keep, you know, filling up the tank of gas with something new. And that's a problem with a lot of franchises in the league. They think, oh, let's just give them another year. Oh, let's just give them another year. And before you know it,
nothing.
You're 3 years down the road and it's over.
Yeah. The Jays traded a Nick Robertson before the Leafs did.
They did. They traded Nick Robertson today, apparently. They had one. Who knew?
Yeah, anyway.
Unbelievable.
But, I've always said that, you know, the team knows before other people know. Even when the name is still relevant, the team's like, God, I'm not sure about this guy. That's when you should probably make some of those moves. So, I know we're jumping around, but I know you're the whole league. So, Calgary Flames, not just going to ask you about all the young guys. Last night, Adam Klapka scores the game-tying goal. He also makes an unbelievable, pulls it from behind the net for a tuck that Lomberg puts in. They've another come from behind. Does Klapka have a chance to be a guy in the league? 6'8", 24 years old.
He's got a guy, as Calgary gets good, to be in the four. Like, that's what he is. I'm not going to, again, like, he's had a hell of a week. Like, he was challenging people and, you know, doing what he's got to do. He made that move on the blue line. It was like, whoa, what just happened there? Where'd that come from? He's a four. He's a big four. If he can create chaos, and I'm not talking about having to drop the flippers either. I'm just talking about being at a hard out and creating space for your group, i.e. Lomberg, mm-hmm. who, by the way, Ryan Lomberg, if anybody Florida wants guy. To watch a lot of he is the biggest smile, one of the most energetic guys in the league. What a great guy to have in your room. But that all fits the culture there. That all fits the culture there. And Klapka is a four, though, Bordy. I'm not going to oversell that.
All right. I just one last thing before we go. We let you be on your way. The Ottawa Senators. I watched yesterday. We had a quick conversation about the trade for Cousins and Norris. Some of the behind the scenes thing. We didn't really get to see the full conversations people have. But in your experience, what are those conversations? You can touch on that one specifically if you like, or just tell us generally about the process the scouts have in those big trades?
So the first thing that happens is you eliminate any outside noise, and that includes injuries. So what you do is you take a look at the athlete and you say to yourself, on the best day, who's the better player? And give me the reasons why. Mm-hmm. So, you know, right shot, left shot, play it fast enough, win face-offs, track 200 feet, create better in the secondary offense. Can he be used in all situations? What's his compete level like? And then the big one for me, and I would always ask our staff this, on his worst possible day, and I mean your worst day, you know, like we all have bad days. You can wake up on the wrong side of the bed or whatever. On your worst possible day, how much does he have to give the group on his bad days? Because that's really important to me. It's a hard league and things. I need to know that. Like, I want to know that. It's not an exact science, but you can kind of figure it out, right? So you start with that. And then beyond that, is when you start to talk about injury history and, you know, situational success or lack thereof, because some players that leave Buffalo, for example, they spike out other places. You ask yourself the question, why? Is it what they're surrounded with? Is it because they were not the best version of themselves there, et cetera, et cetera. And then it gets to the medical with Norris, and that we would hand that off to our medical people. You would ask for the medical from the Ottawa Senators, hopefully the agents involved in that, and it would be as truthful as possible. If you don't get that medical, in my experience, if I don't get a medical, I don't recommend that we do that deal to our upper management, our ownership, our president, whatever. Because when you've had several shoulder surgeries like that, I need to know that I'm going to have this player at that age for several years, because that's what Cousins is going to give in Ottawa. So those are the background discussions. And, you know, if you're really lucky, you've run face first into one of the trainers who can tell you exactly what this kid's like behind the scenes and how respectful he is as well. Because when you want to really know everything about a player, go ask the trainer. As we all know, they know everything about everything.
They do. They're the guys in any given dressing room. All right, Books. Well, go ask some people in the en route. What's up with them there?
Your really bad day is talking to us from a Kitchener en route.
Next time, let's do it live, like me walking around the audience.
Do a man on the street, just do an interview.
With the live cam.
What do you think of the Leafs? You're just getting killed.
Pure entertainment.
All right, Books.
See you, bud. Drive safe.
Thanks for your time, buddy.
All right, boys. We'll see you. Thanks for having me.
All right, Jason Buchel of the Pro Hockey Group and Sportsnet. Great stuff.
What a guy.
Yeah, what a guy. You want to do some game time before we go?
Let her rip. All right. Game time presented by Bet365. Visit the app, latest odds, and find out why it's ever ordinary at Bet365. It's 19+, Ontario only. Please play responsibly. Yeah, so I was furiously trying to log into figure out how to do the futures on here because I'm so bad. But just quickly, it was my phone is malfunctioning as we're quickly talking here. Lots of action on the ice tonight, and the big one for the Leafs. And for the Montreal Canadiens, in fact, like this game tonight has a ton of stakes. The Montreal Canadiens are +140 underdogs on home ice against the Florida Panthers.
Give me the Panthers.
I mean, this could go one of two ways, right? That the slap shot at the end of the game, which I tried to argue yesterday that, you know, there was still time on the clock, and finding a guy 5K is a little bit weird for a shot where there's time on the clock. I think that would probably inspire the Montreal Canadiens. They're going to come out hot. Like, I know they're at home. That's going to be an electric crowd. There's some hate involved. I do think there's a world where the Montreal Canadiens are big time in that game. But yeah. I think the other side of it is you could get the Florida Panthers minus a goal and a half at +150. And I don't think that's the worst bet either. But
no.
I think if you were looking to bet the Montreal Canadiens tonight, I think they would be live underdogs in that game.
The one thing on that game, The Canadians have the opportunity to dress Arbor Jacki, and they're not. So if they were really mad about that thing or focused on it, I think they'd throw him in. I'm going to be talking about that after this on Hockey Central with Don Granato, which is pretty cool.
Love that.
Yeah.
excuse me. Tonight, the Calgary Flames have yet another massive game. Every game for them is the biggest of the year. They are in Utah to take on the Hockey Club. They're big dogs, the Utah Hockey Club. Big travel for them. Taking on the Calgary Flames, -185 for the Utah Hockey Club tonight, +155 for the Calgary Flames in the money line there. Big value on Calgary if they think they can do it in the second half. They have Dustin Wolf going tonight, so we'll see. And the LA Kings hosting the Winnipeg Jets. The LA Kings are -120. Rare chance to get the Jets at plus money, +100 for the Jets tonight in LA. Right. And that was Game Time presented by Bet365. Visit the app for latest odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. +19+, Ontario only. Please play responsibly.
Well, when we come back, we're going to talk to your friend and mine, Dan Riccio of Canuck Central, our boy. A lot of news about Rick Tocchet. Is he signing, extending? What's going on there?
Big suitor extension coming up here for the
Puce. Anyway.
You notice why I didn't say his first name? Because I'm not sure if it's like Puice or
Puce.
I don't know how to say it. So.
It's Puce.
Okay.
All right. When we come back, Dan Riccio, Canuck Central.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, right, welcome back to Real Born and McKee. This hour of Real Born and McKee is brought to you by Bet365. Thank you for your support there. We really appreciate it. Can I tell you my favorite Twitter thing I just found? Is Ryan Leonard's contract, his entry-level contract. This year has a $275,000 performance bonus if he wins the Conn Smythe.
Wow.
Can you imagine being confident enough to be like, and put a bonus in if I'm the best player in the whole league in the playoffs my first year?
Gotta tell you, that'd be quite a story.
I gotta tell you, that'd be worth a lot more than $275,000. Yeah. They'd be like, yeah, we'll give you $10 million if you win the Conn Smythe. Who cares? Yeah,
Ovi would personally give him $10 million.
Yeah. What an incredible bonus that is. We are awaiting Dan Riccio.
I think he's ready.
We got the reach. How you doing, Dan Riccio of Canuck Central? How are you, pal?
What's happening, fellas? What's my bonus for this hit?
$275,000 if it brings us in. Oh, I don't know.
Your bonus is getting to talk to your oldest buddy, Sam.
Oh,
that's what it was. We've been working.
You know what? It's a good enough bonus for me.
Get a new agent.
We've been working together like literally my first day at the station.
And what year would that have been?
I don't know. Way longer ago than I
started in
09. Oof. So I probably would have been like 2011, 2012. And I remember doing screening Raptors post game calls. And I didn't know how to like punch in the phones. And Riccio was working the board and I was freaking out. And Eric Smith was not pleased with me. It was not a great scene. It was not a great scene. And now look at us.
It's just a typical day at the office.
Yeah, that was tough.
That's great. Well, we appreciate you coming on. We have been dabbling in Canucks conversations.
Yeah.
We had joked that our first question to you might be just a umbrella year-long question. What's happening over there?
Boy, I think it really all goes back to the beginning of the year. You know, lately it's kind of like expectations have come so far down for the Canucks that you're like, all right, you know, bunch of young kids, bunch of injuries, and they're punching above their weight, still playing pretty well, giving the Jets a good game on Sunday. And it's just, it's rough right now, you know, without Elias Pettersson and Filipino out of the lineup, you're down your top two centermen. Quinn Hughes is playing at less than 100%. You just can't have the biggest expectations for what this team is as currently constructed. But you go back to the beginning of the season and expectations were, well, they're going to do better than they did last year, right? When they took Edmonton to game 7 of the second round, and they've gotten nowhere close. And it really went off the rails right from the start. Obviously, whatever was happening behind the scenes had a big effect on that. And they've never been able to get it back and going ever since all of that happened in December and January with Elias Pettersson and JT Miller.
Yeah. So I guess if you were going to like do the sports talk radio thing and like place the blame somewhere, where would it be? Like, it feels like there's so many different places, injuries, a very high profile spat between the team's two best players, Quinn Hughes, you know, missing time when it was at most crucial. Them talking about him flying into the Four Nation. Quinn Hughes is coming. Remember that? That was insane. Yeah. Like, where does the biggest Tocchet's been taking some heat I see on my Canucks Twitter. Like, where does it lie?
Honestly, I do think it goes back to Miller and Pettersson and whatever exactly it was that happened between those two. You know, of course, injuries played a big factor. They didn't have Dakota Joshua from the start of the year. Filip Hronek missed 2 months. Quinn Hughes has missed time. Thatcher Demko's barely played. They've had a ton of injuries and to big players throughout the course of the year. JT Miller, even he took the 10-game absence before he eventually got traded. But all of that, you think about the commitment that the team had last year, the way they defended, how hard they played for Rick Tocchet, and how they won that Pacific Division title. We didn't see that at the start of the year. They were getting results early on. They kind of kept the smoke and mirrors thing going through early November. And then think they had 3 wins in all of December. You know, it really, the cracks started to show. They were getting blown out on home ice when they hardly ever got blown out last year when Rick Tocchet won the Jack Adams. They just did not have the same level of buy-in. Mm-hmm. And now, really since the Miller trade, they've gotten that back. And I don't want to put this on Miller because there's plenty of blame to go around in the whole situation. But whatever it was that got into that room and how deep that spat between Miller and Pettersson got, it affected the way the team played on the ice. And I don't think you can separate how this team played early in the season from where they've ended up here and how that element of this season plays a factor into that.
So to go back and forth from positives to negative, because there's lots of negatives that we could talk about, but is Quinn Hughes, is Quinn Hughes the best player in the league? Because I honestly, every night I watch them, and I love when they're on the East Coast because I like East Coast Quinn Hughes as opposed to PST Quinn Hughes. But, I mean, he's one of the main reasons I have any chance in every game I watch. Like, he just has the puck the entire time he's on the ice. He plays all of every overtime. Like, every overtime, he's out there for 4 of the minutes. I you know, if they ever found a way, and it's going to be impossible now, what are their chances to make the playoffs? But he is a legit MVP candidate for me. I love watching him play. He's unbelievable.
Yeah, they don't even they're well out of the playoffs without Quinn Hughes this year. I mean, the season would have been cooked in December if it were not for Quinn Hughes and the way that he's played this season. He's an unbelievable talent. And I do think, you know, we don't often see defensemen have the capability to be talked about in the Connor McDavid sort of range, the Nathan MacKinnon sort of range. But Hughes and Makar are there, the way that they can dominate a game. And certainly Hughes, because he's does it as a one-man show. Like, Makar has MacKinnon to work off of. Whereas Hughes, it's like, yeah, I'm going to have the puck for 4+ minutes a night when I'm on the ice, when nobody else in the league is above 3, usually. Mm-hmm. It's an absolutely insane thing to watch, the way that Quinn Hughes controls a game. But the injuries have really affected him lately, and you know, I think you see it more on the defensive end than anything else since he's returned from that injury that kept him out of the Four Nations. The Canucks have been outscored 14-10 with him on the ice. Before that, they were I think plus 20 at 5-on-5 with Quinn Hughes on the ice. So it's been a drastic difference. He just hasn't been able to defend as hard. You see it when, you know, he gets into battles. They try to shelter him as much as they can away from those kinds of things. But he's still everything to this team. And if he gets back to it, you know, they might just win out the season and find a way to sneak in.
So do you think there's any chance, like, if they lose a couple here and it goes down to 0.1% or whatever, that he just stops playing? That they, like, just kind of shut him down here?
I think it's going to be ultimately Quinn Hughes' decision, but I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah. So he's clearly not at 100%. Yeah. I don't know what percentage he is on it. At one point, Rick Tocchet was like, "We're not going to play him if he's below 80%." But I'm like, "Are we sure about that?"
As long as a fun number to pick.
Are we sure about this? I don't know. But you know, again, he's just clearly not there. And I think as soon as they're out of the playoffs, you might see Quinn Hughes get shut down for the season. But I think ultimately the competitor that he is, it's going to come down to how he feels about it.
All right. Well, Tocchet is at the center of the news of the day. You know, Elliot put out a story today saying that, you know, the Canucks are saying behind the scenes that Tocchet's either going to play out his, you know, sign extension or they're going to activate the, they have the option, right, for Tocchet next year. Where are things at with Tocchet and coaching Vancouver?
1 year coaching contracts always go good.
I think right now, Tocchet, going all the way back, we asked him first about it on Canucks Central in September when we were at training camp in Penticton. And even then, he had sort of the same mantra, mindset, I'm not worried about it. We'll figure it out at the end of the year. So he's always been consistent in his messaging when he's asked about his contract. But I do think this comes down to a couple of things when they do get down and dirty with the negotiation of it all. Money, you know, is he going to get paid at the top end, which is about $5 million? He's got the Jack Adams. So I don't know if he gets into the Mike Sullivan, John Cooper range of salary for coaches, but he's probably above $4 million with what he's put on paper as the Canucks head coach. And the Canucks, unless they're playing multiple head coaches like they were when they had Tocchet, Boudreaux, and Travis Green still on the payroll at one time, they generally don't go into that range of what they pay their head coaches. So I think that's going to be something that's a part of the negotiation, but also a bigger part of this, not just on the money end of things, is how does Tockett feel about the situation? Does he, it's been a trying year, as we've discussed, everything that he's had to deal with off the ice, not so much about the X's and O's this year as a coach would like it to be. So how does that affect the way that he feels about the future in Vancouver? How does he look at the situation with Quinn Hughes? What does that look like beyond his current contract, which has got 2 years remaining after this one? And obviously the biggest question is, does he think he can win with Elias Pettersson as his number one center? And I think that's a big part of, you know, when they talk about the future and how they're going to make sure that whatever happened this season doesn't happen again, how do they try to tackle that when they get to their exit meetings at the end of the season?
Yeah. So, and there's also the little carrot out there of his, you know, the Flyers Hall of Famer with the opening with the Philadelphia Flyers here after Torts got shown the door.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, that's, everybody's making that connection.
Well, on that, I think, like, what happened today and what Elliot reported today, and we've talked about it on Canuck Central, Sat has reported it as well. You know, the Canucks are using that option year as a way of staving off any potential interest.
Yeah.
Now they're saying, you know, we're going to pick up the option. And then, you know, if Rick Tockett doesn't want to coach, well, then he's not going to be coaching for anybody. So it's their way of putting their foot down and saying Rick Tockett is ours and everybody else can back up.
But to my point is like, you want to go coach? Like, I watched that Flyers team the other night. Like, they reek. I know they have like a bunch of picks coming up here and he's a Flyer Hall of Famer and maybe a build into this role. But like, you can picture next year the Canucks being back to being a playoff team. Like, the pieces are there. Quinn Hughes still plays there. Hronek, they've still got a good top pair. They got a good goalie when he plays Demko, a good backup option in Lankinen, who's capable and showed great at this time. Pettersson's been brutal this year, but like, that could turn around. They have pieces. To me, the only reason the Flyers thing is like any sort of attractiveness is just because he's a Flyer Hall of Famer going home. He knows Keith Jones, but like, do you want to just stink, or do you want to like actually coach a team that has a chance to make the playoffs and compete in the playoffs? I know what I would pick, and it's the Vancouver situation. I know it was crazy this year, but it's not going to be like that 2 years in a row, is it? I don't know. No Miller.
Is it?
Is it? Like, I don't know.
No, like, it's, I mean, the Canucks is still a better situation.
No,
I mean,
question.
The Flyers, whoever gets hired for the Flyers is probably gone in 2 or 3 years when they're more ready to compete than they are as currently constructed. You know, the Flyers, they've got some good prospects. You know, they've got obviously Michkov. They got some good defensemen coming. But like, you know, you talk about having a number one center. I know, like, Elias Pettersson, there's a lot of questions there, but he's still a guy who scored 100 points in the league. Yeah. He scored close to 40 goals in the league. The Flyers don't even have a guy coming, really, that plays center that has that kind of potential and has the ability to take over a game the way we once saw Elias Pettersson do. So I would have those questions if I'm Rick Tockett. I know there's a deep connection there with Keith Jones, their president of hockey ops, that really, you know, makes you point the dots and connect the dots in the situation. But you're right, Sammy. I mean, it just doesn't make a ton of sense. That Flyers gig is one that is kind of like feels like one where a guy's coaching it just to be the guy that gets fired in 2 or 3 years time.
They're the Bruno Caboclo of hockey teams, 2 years away from me and 2 years away.
but I do think it, you know, if that's how you feel about the Flyers, it's relevant. You know, you said that you like a lot about what's going on with the Canucks. Where do you see the Canucks' future reach? Like, you know, in terms of guys on the way, guys who are going to stay, can Pettersson find it? You know, the Tockett being not wanting to be there and having them do the option year thing is probably not great either.
No.
It'd be nice to clear up some of that stuff. So what's the direction for the Canucks if they are to miss playoffs this year?
Oh, man, I'd love to be able to see into the future, get the crystal ball, get the crystal ball going and seeing exactly how this offseason plays out. The biggest thing with the Canucks is what happens and how they keep Quinn Hughes happy to the point that come next year, next summer, he's willing to sit at the table and be like, yeah, sure, I'll take $120 million from you guys for my next 8 years. Because that's really what matters right now is how do we sell this future to Quinn Hughes? And, you know, maybe you'd like to take a little bit of a deeper breath and try to let this breathe, let some of your young guys like Tom Volander and Jonathan Lekkerimäki play out next year and see how that develops. But I don't think on Quinn Hughes's timeline, you have that opportunity. You need to make big moves this summer to set yourself back up in the conversation to be in the playoffs and maybe be a cup contender next year, which is a wild timeline, but you've got to get there quickly. Yeah. And Elias Pettersson is the biggest part of that question. What do you get out of him? Do you keep him? I don't see how you trade him, get somebody better. So ultimately, I think he stays in Vancouver. And two, what are you going to add to this roster this summer? There's not a lot of options in free agency. You're probably not keeping Brock Besser with how the trade deadline played out. I just don't see where you're getting that piece in free agency, mm-hmm. and you're going to have to trade for somebody. Do you have the pieces that other teams really want if you're going to try and acquire a top six impact player? And they probably need two of them.
All right. Well, Reach, we're before I let you go here real quick, you got 8 games left for the Canucks. 16 points would take you to 97. So you probably got to win, what, 7?
8-0.
Something like that.
7-0-1 might do it.
7-0-1.
Yeah, it's every game is must win. I mean, the Blues are never losing again. So you're catching the Minnesota Wild.
They might hit the skids. It could happen.
I mean, they got that. Go ahead, bud.
It's probably going to happen. But if they win 4 of their 7, I mean, it's kind of cooked anyways for the Canucks. So you're not going to win any of the tiebreakers either in the conversation. So you got to get to at least 7 wins in this race right now, which didn't look like it was going to need 95 points a couple of weeks ago. But with the way the Blues have gone, that conversation changed. You need 7 of 8, probably 8 of 8, if you're going to really make it.
The Blues got another powerhouse tonight, the Detroit Red Wings. So blame the schedule makers for the Canucks. Like, the Blues have had a cupcake for 2 weeks here. I know. Been brutal.
Don't have a ton of confidence in the Iser plan, if I'm being honest.
It has not been pretty. And you got your Travis Matthews. Have you been golfing already out there, Reach? Did you come from the course? Like, I just see that golf shirt on.
Oh, man, the cherry blossoms are out. I'm feeling the golf course calling my name every day, but the schedule's been a little too busy lately. Yeah. But we'll get out there later this week.
We got 35 millimeters of freezing rain apparently coming to GTA tomorrow. So
Cool. Another ice storm?
Cool. Yeah, another ice storm. Yeah, great.
All right, Reach. Well, thanks for your time, man. We appreciate it.
Cheers, fellas.
All right, that's Dan Riccio of Canucks Central, 4 to 6 p.m.
So do you, like, I don't know. Like, I get why, like, the history and the Flyers Hall of Famer. But Rick Tocchet's a competitor. I guess it comes out of what he wants. He's an incredibly competitive guy.
Yeah.
And he saw, like, parts of that team be really good last year. They have great pieces. Mm-hmm. If you had the choice next season who to coach, there's no comparison.
I don't know if there isn't.
Really?
Well, here's why. I would say with those 7 picks in the first 2 rounds this summer, I would like to know, what are you doing with those?
Are you acquiring players or drafting?
Are you flipping those and now we're going to add a center? Now we're going to get some players that I can work with? Or are we waiting 5 years for those picks to be useful players? Mm. There is something to be said for stability. And Briere and Jones have done that for Philly, where they've calmed things down. Tort stepped out of line and started acting a little squirrely. And they were like, that's enough.
Yeah, I'm seeing some of the stuff from the Chicklet guys. You see, they were talking about, like, some of the stuff that was said between you. I'm not going to try to paraphrase it, but, like,
was it between him and York?
Yeah, like, I don't know if they were, but it was pretty nasty stuff. Yeah. Like, I'm maybe bury him. Like, you're not going to play even if you sign. Like, all this kind of stuff. And it's like, yeah, they were like, you know what?
Here's the door.
Goodbye.
Thanks. You don't want this in a rebuild anyway, and that's fine. You know, I think right now they're doing some assessing of what are these guys like without Torts. But I do think it looks like a stable place to go be the coach. Mm-hmm. And I heard Doug Armstrong talking about Jim Montgomery and saying, you know, not often you get to be a guy who's there for sort of the turnaround and then still be the coach you want there once the team's there. Could Tocchet do that for Philly, where you say, we're going to try to turn around quick, flip some of these picks?
He's definitely stability. If he would represent that, if you are Briere and Keith Jones, no question.
Give him a 5-year contract. Because I do think if you look at Vancouver, stability has not been a word I associate with what's going on this year. You know, like, man, I forgot.
But there's no way it could ever be as bad as it was that year.
No, I think you're probably right.
2 quick things.
Yes.
Last time the Red Wings and the Bruins both missed the playoffs in a season?
No idea.
1967.
Whoa.
Gonna happen this year. Ooh. And last thing, Shout out, Onside Attack, playing game 3 at the Bayshore tonight. Gonna be rocking. Shock the world, boys.
Thank you to Jason Buchla, Dan Riccio. Who do we have in the first hour? Anthony Petrelli.
Yes.
Thanks to everyone. We will be back on Thursday.
Yep.
Just me and McKee. We'll see you then.